Good evening. Tonight in the labyrinth, the subject is dynamics. Dynamics can refer to several things. How hard you hit your instrument, how hard this makes it, and therefore the air around it, and therefore your eardrums vibrate, and how loud is the resulting sound you experience. This is a common theme for musical variables. We've already seen it in musical time, we'll see it tonight with dynamics, and we'll go on to see it with pitch and other things. We're used to thinking of phenomena of existing in different but connected realities that we have distinct words for and approaches to, and this gives us opportunities for getting sloppy and mixed up. The main distinction is between the physical, acoustic description of a sound, like its intensity or its frequency, and the psychological experience associated with it, like its loudness or its pitch. There are others too. There's the symbolic, theoretical description that the composer uses to understand it and to indicate it in his scores. And there's the practical knowledge that the performer, instrument maker, and recording engineer use to realize it. First, I'll talk about the different units used to measure dynamics, because this will give us an especially detailed view of the distinction between the physical description and its perception. In the second half, I'll talk about how to understand and use dynamics. The most basic measurements of dynamics are physical, measurements of pressure, intensity, and power. A future episode will be devoted to sound itself. For now, it's enough to say that sound is a traveling pressure wave, a series of alternating compressions and rarefactions that travel through a medium, like the air in a concert hall. So, we're interested in measuring these fluctuations in pressure, the differences between the compressions and rarefactions from the ambient average pressure of the medium. Pressure is force applied over an area, and it's measured in units of newtons per meter squared, sometimes called pascals. The threshold of hearing depends on many factors, on the individual and the frequencies involved, but roughly speaking, the smallest acoustic pressures that anyone can sense are about 2 times 10 to the negative 5 newtons per meter squared. That's 0.00002 pascals. This is measured at a standard frequency, 1000 hertz. The classic example is a mosquito flying 3 meters away. An upper limit is harder to pin down. As the pressure fluctuations increase, there's increasing discomfort and danger of injury, and finally pain. Probably 20 pascals is a good safe figure for the threshold of pain. The classic example is a jet taking off. Notice how the ratio of smallest to largest pressures is 1 million. To put these figures in perspective, the ambient pressure at sea level is about 100,000 pascals. It's a bit more common to measure the intensity of the fluctuations in power flux, in units of watts per square meter. This is a measure of the flow of energy through an area, and it's one step closer to a perceptual measure of loudness. Sound intensity is proportional to the square of pressure amplitude, so if the pressure fluctuations double, the intensity quadruples. The equation for converting between them is pressure equals 20 times the square root of intensity. Equivalently, intensity equals pressure divided by 20, that quantity squared. The factor of 20 is just to satisfy the units. It's a little strange to recite equations like this. I'll put them in the notes on the forum at lomt.freeforums.org. Sometimes it's more useful to talk about the actual power landing on an actual area, like a microphone membrane or an eardrum. The unit of power is the watt. In terms of an acoustic source, if you can assume that it sprays sound outward in a sphere around itself, this is called free field radiation. The intensity experienced by the listener is directly related to the power of the source and inversely related to the square of the distance between the source and the listener, with a factor of 4 pi, the number of steradians in a sphere. In the other direction, the equation is intensity equals power divided by the quantity 4 pi distance squared. Sometimes, like in the case of a megaphone, radiation patterns aren't spherical, And sometimes, like in the case of a waveguide, like the tube of a trumpet or listening at the end of a long hallway, the power is restricted to a channel, and so the factor in the power law can be different. The important point is that, in many cases, the intensity of the sound drops off with the square of the distance from the source. Unless you're fooling around with microphones, speakers, and room acoustics, you probably won't have much use for physical units like that. If you're working with audio, though, particularly with synthesis or mixing, you'll need an understanding of amplitude. Amplitude is really just an abstraction of pressure measurements, removing the units and rescaling them to some convenient range. The range might be 0 to 1, or 0 to 2 to the 15th, or whatever. When you're synthesizing a sound or mixing audio, the exact pressure doesn't matter, because you can't really predict the level it will be played at, so you're only interested in relative levels. Here's the tricky thing about amplitude. It means two things, and I've purposely been glossing over the distinction. Here it is. The measurement of an audio signal at a specific instant is properly called its instantaneous amplitude. You'll see this as a signed number, perhaps between negative and positive 1, and stored as a floating point number, or perhaps between plus and minus 32,768, and stored as a 16-bit integer. The other kind of amplitude is just called amplitude, and it's actually hard to define. It's the maximum deviation from zero of the instantaneous amplitude, so it's always positive. But over what length of time? Certainly, over some length of time longer than the fluctuations of the signal. Maybe as long as a whole note, but probably not so long as the whole piece. We often talk about the amplitude of a sound as a kind of slow-moving envelope function, which has been multiplied with a fast-moving, and therefore audible, waveform function to produce the complete sound. Typical sounds look like that. There's usually a quickly changing wave going back and forth from positive to negative, but the extent to which its extrema deviate from zero changes slowly. The eye traces out the outline of the amplitude. I'll post a diagram to show you what I mean. Despite the vagueness of the definition, there's rarely any confusion about it. Sound level, measured with decibels, is the next step towards a perceptual unit of loudness. Using a linear measure like amplitude or pressure doesn't match our sense of loudness very well, because loudness, like many senses, is logarithmic. That is, we don't experience the difference between two loudnesses, we experience the ratio between them. For example, we hear the change between amplitudes of 0.1 and 0.2 as being the same as the change between amplitudes of 0.4 and 0.8. This can be taken into account by mapping any of the above units onto a logarithmic scale. By convention, a logarithm to the base 10 is used, and the equation for amplitude, for example, is 20 log to the base 10 of the ratio between two amplitudes. I'll plot a graph of this on the forum. There are similar formulae for other units, and I'll post those too. The result of this is a unit called decibels, written lowercase d, uppercase b. Yes, there's a weird convention here. The unit is the bell, but because of convenience and tradition, people only talk about tenths of a bell, or decibels. One bell, or 10 decibels, represents, roughly speaking, a doubling of apparent loudness. So far, it's not really a unit of measure, just a unit for comparing measurements. To make it a unit of measure, we have to decide on the units it's comparing and on an absolute reference level for one of them. The choice of units is actually trivial, since the result in decibels will turn out to be the same, but you sometimes see the unit named after it, as sound pressure level, or sound amplitude level, or sound power level, and so on. But they're all sound levels, measured in decibels. The choice of a reference point is more interesting. Usually, it's the lower number, and usually the threshold of hearing is chosen for this. So, for example, sound intensity level equals 10 log to the base 10 of I divided by I naught. where I is the measured intensity and I naught is the threshold of hearing, 10 to the negative 12 watts per meter squared. So it's a way of measuring the strength of a sound relative to the threshold of hearing. This is only roughly related to loudness, as we'll see in a minute. In these units, the range of musically useful human hearing is something like 0 to 100 decibels. Another way is to use the upper number as a reference point, say the maximum amplitude. You could call that 0 decibels and then measure other amplitudes in decibels below 0. This can be convenient, and you'll see this done in audio editors sometimes. The trouble with measuring sound level in this way is that it's not exactly the way we hear. This is where the difference between a physical phenomenon and the perceptual experience becomes important. We'd like to think that pitch is simply the experience of frequency, and that loudness is simply the experience of intensity, and so on. But there's more to it than that. Other things like frequency, spectral content, and even duration affect the perception of loudness. As it turns out, frequency is particularly important. We are much more sensitive to some frequency ranges than to others. There are sound level meters, devices for measuring environmental loudness, that attempt to take this into account by weighting the contributions of some frequencies more than others. These are the weighting curves that you sometimes see quoted with measurements of background noise. There are older American ones with one-letter names, and newer, better European ones developed by the BBC. They differ in what sort of noise source and sound level they are intended to measure. Most of them are old and not very good. Standards have a way of sticking around. But they do make noise measurements a little more perceptually relevant. These are things that you might have to deal with in live recording and room acoustics, but they aren't of great significance to the composer or synthesist. For computer music, it's common to use raw decibels to specify amplitude, but there are much more perceptually significant units available. These grew out of the famous Fletcher-Munson curves, first published in 1933 and recently updated with better data. I can't resist an aside here. Harvey Fletcher was best known as the inventor of the hearing aid, but after he died in 1982, a dramatic deathbed confession was revealed. It was actually he who had done the famous Millikan oil drop experiment, for which his graduate advisor, Robert Millikan, received the Nobel Prize. For we of the labyrinth, however, oil drops are trivia. We want the curves. The famous curves, and I'll post a picture of them, are really a three-dimensional plot of apparent loudness versus sound level and frequency. The lines that you see on the graph are contours of equal loudness. As you'd expect, loudness increases with sound level, but it also varies a lot with frequency. For example, 20 decibels at 2000 hertz sounds as loud as 90 decibels at 20 hertz. A perceptual unit called Fons is based on the equal loudness contours, choosing 1000 hertz as a reference frequency. The loudness of any sound expressed in Fons is the same as the sound level expressed in decibels of a pure tone, that is, a tone containing only one frequency, at the reference frequency. So, for example, a pure tone of 40 Fons at 1000 hertz is exactly as loud as a pure tone of 40 Fons at 70 hertz. But the first has a sound level of 40 decibels, and the second a sound level of 70 decibels. If you're a composer, it would be easier for you to specify loudness in Fons than in decibels, so that you don't have to take this into account. However, you'd need synthesis algorithms calibrated in Fons. Fons are an excellent perceptual scale for loudness. The only trouble with them is that they're linear. A doubling of value doesn't lead to a doubling of loudness. To correct this, there's one more unit, called sones. Sones are defined so that one sone equals 40 Fons, and every increase of 10 Fons is equivalent to a doubling of sones. So, given Fons, subtract 40, divide by 10, and take 2 to that power for the equivalent sones. One sone is about the loudness of a quiet conversation. The musically useful range of loudnesses in sones is roughly 1/16 to 64. It might be possible to go one step further. Even if you have equipment and software calibrated in sones, This doesn't take into account certain significant effects, mainly masking effects. I'll talk about these in a future episode. For now, I'll just say that a loud sound close in frequency to a soft sound may mask it, making it inaudible. This can even happen if the two are not simultaneous, even if the soft one comes first. This can throw off the specified loudnesses. In a band, this is corrected instinctively. For example, a clarinet playing piano is softer on its own than when the strings are playing mezzo forte. There are many ways of manipulating the sound to make these corrections, and very sophisticated software might someday be able to make them automatically, but the programming context is a thorny problem. If you're a programmer, give me a call. That's it for the units used to measure loudness. It may sound confusing, but if you go to the forum and look at the diagrams and some of the formulae printed out, it should make things a lot clearer. The forum is at lomt.freeforums.org. In the next episode, I'll talk about how to use dynamics.